I just tweeted out Hillary Clinton, NBC News projects her winning the New York primary. And you would have thought that I tweeted out a picture of, like, ugly babies. Welcome to In the Thick, a podcast about politics and the race to the White House in 2016. We're the show that examines the week's political coverage through a diverse lens with different perspectives. I'm your host, Julio Ricardo Varela, filling in for Maria Hinojosa, who is reporting in Chicago this week. Joining us today in our Harlem studio is Basil Smigel, executive director of the New York State Democratic Party and former Clinton Senate staffer. Basil, what's up, man?
Hey, how's everybody doing?
I'm great, Basil. I'm sure you're relieved that the New York primary is over. And in Washington, D.C., we have Hadass Gold, media reporter for Politico.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me in this week's episode of In the Thick. The New York primary has come and gone, and as expected, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump won by huge margins. Huge. See what I did there? Let's start on the Democratic side by looking at some exit polling data. Clinton continued to win communities of color big time. She won the African-American vote by 50 points, and she won the Latino vote by 26 after trailing in some recent polls. Why was Bernie unable to win communities of color? Basil, go for it.
She worked really hard over the last couple of weeks, going to churches, going to the Bronx. She had tremendous support in the Latino community from, among others, the borough president, Ruben Diaz Jr., the Bronx operation under assembly member and county leader Marcus Crespo. You know, she's winning diverse communities. Bernie Sanders' campaign has historically had an issue with attracting communities of color, and I don't foresee that changing anytime soon, despite the effort.
So, Hadass, what do you have to say about it?
I think that it was a time when the polls showed us what was actually going to happen. I think people were a little bit surprised by how much of a sweep Trump had. And I think that New York will be seen as a turning point towards the general election. It's hard to see on either side who can take on the nomination other than the two front runners right now. It'll be very important for the Democrats to start putting the contentious primary at some point behind them, because they've got bigger fish to fry right now with Donald Trump.
Agreed.
Speaking of Trump, it was a pretty big margin of victory.
We're leading by a lot and we can't be caught. It's impossible to catch us.
What do you think are his chances in the general election if he becomes the nominee?
Not very good. In the way he's campaigning, he's talking about governing toward fear, where I think the Democratic candidates are governing to our aspirations. And I think that the specter of him continuing to campaign with the kind of rhetoric that he's used that has seemed to be so misogynistic and racist and Islamophobic and xenophobic, as angry as the American people might be, I just don't know if we're going to, as a country, aspire to that.
I wouldn't be so fast as to say that there's no way he can win or that he's not likely going to win, because I think that as we've seen, Donald Trump as a person and as a candidate and as a political movement is completely unpredictable. And I think that I'm sorry for Hillary Clinton, but she has pretty high unfavorable still. People are looking at this election and they're saying, I don't like anybody. You know, they're like, what am I going to have to vote for? Like either this like Donald Trump guy or for Hillary Clinton, who I'm maybe not necessarily excited about. I caution people who are like, oh, if Donald Trump is the nominee, it'll be great. Hillary Clinton would much rather run against Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz follows typical kind of rules of the game and you kind of understand what he's doing. And with Donald Trump, it's like a Tasmanian devil where you just don't know which way they're going to go and how they're going to run. And that Tasmanian devil might just beat you. You don't know. I mean, go ask Jeb Bush.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my image out of Donald Trump as a Tasmanian devil with like Looney Tunes all of a sudden. So let's get back to Sanders. 3 million voters were registered as independents, but because they weren't registered as Democrats or Republicans, they couldn't vote in the primary. And Bernie Sanders himself called attention to this. So let's listen to the clip.
If you can believe this, in New York State today, about 27% of the eligible voters in that state are unable to participate in the Democratic or Republican primaries because they have chosen to list themselves as independents. That's wrong.
So, Hadass, do you agree with Basil on the fact that this is just a campaign tactic by the Sanders campaign to kind of stay relevant?
I think it's both somewhat a tactic, but I also think that they I mean, Sanders was an independent in Congress, though he caucused with the Democrats. He's never been, you know, a guy who said he's been a Democrat his whole life. He prides himself on his independent streak. And I think that it's important in the way that it's bringing in people who might not otherwise be involved in a primary process, but then they're coming up against what you mentioned about the registration rules, which has been an entire issue in New York.
Let's talk about the closed primaries, Basil. And believe me, if I say anything dumb or ridiculous, feel free to call me out. It's all good. I'm just a host. I'm just asking the questions.
You know, I am a college professor also. I always say there are no stupid or dumb questions. Everything is relevant.
With the host disclosure said, let's get into this issue of closed primaries, because all of a sudden closed primaries are sort of this like top Google topic. So why even have closed primaries? Why would a party make this decision? And then, you know, why does New York force voters to change their registration almost 200 days before the primary? And who's paying any attention to this more than a year before the general?
Number one, this is not a party rule. This is in our state constitution. These are rules that have been on the books for 50 years or more. In terms of the deadline in particular from October, which is what I think some of the conversation has centered around, that's been on the books for almost 50 years now. And so can the parties do a better job of sort of, you know, letting people know this? Absolutely. I think this has become more of an issue now because of the number of independent voters that we're seeing, which was not necessarily the case prior to 2008 or 2004 even. So this surge in independent voters, I think, does warrant a conversation about how we go forward. New York is actually fairly liberal compared to a lot of other states in terms of access to the polls. So could we do better? Certainly. But I do caution that this was not something that the party did. These are state laws that have been on the books for a long time.
Isn't the rule outdated for New York?
Well, it requires legislative action. I mean, if you look at what happened yesterday with the rolls, the rolls being purged, you had the mayor coming out and saying, even the attorney general saying, you know, we need to take a look at this and we need to figure out if this could have been done better. So I do think, unfortunately, when you have circumstances like this, it does spur action. But I like the fact that we've seen people come out and say, hey, let's take another look at this.
Hadas, you're looking at it from a national perspective. What do you think about what's happened in New York specifically with the Democrats?
Voter registration has been a huge issue in this country, and I have a feeling that this election hopefully will help move people towards reexamining how we register to vote. Why is it that, you know, 200 some days before the election, you have to register with the party? Because we live in a different world now than we did 50 years ago, likely when these laws were written. It shouldn't be hard to register to vote. It should be one of the easiest things in the world you can do. It should be just as easy as, you know, signing up for cable or something like that. I mean, there should obviously be like steps involved, but it shouldn't be. I think that the perception for a lot of people right now, and this is a bad perception, is that it is hard to register to vote. It is cumbersome. Hopefully this will spark people to get more involved in their local elections, because that's where, you know, local and state level elections, because that's where these things really matter. But it takes a national level election, even though this is a state primary, it's a national like level story, for people to realize that your local rules really directly affect how you participate in democracy.
One of the reasons that you saw a purge from the Board of Elections of a lot of these voters, like over 150,000, if I remember correctly, what the Board of Elections does, it takes into consideration when you vote in federal elections. They are actually paying attention to when you vote. So when you don't vote, and I tell this to folks all the time, it's so important to vote because we know when you don't. and if you're not voting consecutively, particularly in federal elections, they're going to say, oh, this person's inactive, or this person may have moved and didn't tell us. I think if you don't do it in one election, they consider you inactive and they try to find a way to reach you. If you do it in two consecutive elections, if I remember correctly, then you may get purged from the rolls altogether and you have to re-register. And so being a consistent voter is very important.
Basil, we've always thought that voter registration issues were things Republicans were doing. But from what I'm hearing, it seems like it's a Democratic issue too. Are you saying there should be a push to change the law?
What I'm saying is that as a party, you know, we can find ways, and the Republicans can do this as well, you know, find ways to better educate voters about what the deadlines and so on and so forth, unless there is some kind of rule change down the road. This is actually a very important issue to me. We don't even teach this stuff in schools anymore. There is no civics education in schools anymore where you can have young people educated about the process, whether it's where they live or comparatively in other cities or states. We don't do that anymore. So it's actually left to the political parties or the individual candidates to do a lot of this education. We're happy to do it. But the reality is that we need to start younger and get folks engaged in the process at a much younger age so that by the time they are ready and able to vote, you know, they are much more conversant in what happens and can actually push for change if they don't like it or are uncomfortable with it.
I'd like to make a small comment, and this is from my observations in other countries. I was in Argentina once when they were having elections, and just to kind of it's almost needs to be a cultural movement, the same way that smoking has become uncool as anymore. Like voting needs to become the thing to do. And I know you're laughing, but I'm serious because
I'm laughing because I love the fact that you have brought up signing up for cable and smoking. And I'm not trying to cut you off, but continue.
But in Argentina, first of all, Election Day is a national holiday. Mm-hmm. Voting is mandatory. But it turns into this kind of family, like almost a Memorial Day, 4th of July feeling in the country, right? Because people go back to their parents' house. Everybody goes to vote in their local polling place, which is just like ours. It's a school. You get like a little passport book stamp that says you voted. It becomes a memory that kids grow up. You know, I see all these little kids, 3-year-old kids, going with their parents to the polling place because it's a family day off and they're all together, and that gets ingrained into their minds that they go vote and it's very important to them that they get to vote. And so I've always been astounded by the idea that Election Day here is not some kind of federal holiday.
I mean, if people were given free cable that day, it probably could be a federal holiday, you know? You're listening to In the Thick, a podcast about politics and the race of the White House in 2016. Today, we're joined by Basil Smigel, executive director of the New York State Democratic Party, and Hadass Gold, media reporter for Politico. Please rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and follow us at In the Thick Show on Twitter. It really, really helps our show. And get that word out. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your neighbors, and hey, tell your local reps, and tell your local political party machine. We're here. In the Thick. Follow us, rate us, review us. One of the liveliest exchanges in last week's debate was about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Given that almost 10% of New York voters are Jewish, Bernie's critiques of the Israeli government were especially interesting.
Was their response disproportionate? I believe that it was. You have not answered that.
All right, so while Republicans try to one-up each other on who supports Israel more, there is clearly more diversity on the side of the Democrats. Hadass, what role do you see Israel playing in today's Democratic Party? Does Bernie's criticism alter that role at all?
So, to note, I am Israeli. I was born in Israel. I think that what Bernie did is expose that there is a lot more diversity in the American Jewish thought in Israel than some people would like to think. Some people think that if you're Jewish, you're automatically pro-Israel no matter what. But just like in Israel, there's a lot of different strains of political thought. There's the same thing can be said of American Jews. And what Bernie Sanders is showing is uniquely that he is Jewish. He has actually lived in Israel. And he doesn't have to necessarily think that what Israel always does, no matter what, is always right. However, he did make a point that I think a lot of American Jews agree with, was that there has to be a change in tone between how the Israelis and Palestinians deal with each other. It's an important moment in politics to see that a successful candidate can have this position on Israel, and I'm sure it's going to rankle some in the Israeli government, but it will make a lot of other people in Israel excited as well, people who agree with him.
You made the point that he said that he was 100% pro-Israel, so is he redefining what it means to be pro-Israel?
I think he is, but not to such an extreme effect, because you can definitely be pro-Israel and criticize, you know, some of their policies. I think it's become a trope in American politics that you are pro-Israel no matter what, and you always stand behind them because no country is, you know, is always correct, and no politician is always doing the exact right thing that they should be doing that's best for everybody. But I don't think he's redefining it. I think he's just exposing and saying publicly what a lot of people think privately, even including people who are incredibly pro-Israel.
Did it hurt Bernie Sanders?
No, I don't think it necessarily hurt him. I think that it might have hurt him a little bit, but I can't imagine that enough voters would have voted against him because of that single issue, even if they were even if they're Jewish voters, because just like any other voter, I'm sure Jewish voters have a lot of other issues that they consider before, you know, they cast a vote.
We love to end each episode of In the Thick with this question, the stuckness question. So is there a particular story you're stuck on this week? Anything you just can't get out of your head? Basil, what do you got?
When and where will Elizabeth Warren engage? And because I think owing to what we were talking about before, it will play a huge role in trying to bring the party together so that we could unite behind our nominee and take us into November.
Hadass, what's stuck in your head? What can't you get rid of?
This is a story that's been going on now for months, but just the split in the conservative media sphere of people who have kind of placed themselves solidly in Donald Trump's camp. And I'm interested to see how they are in the future, whether they, you know, assuming that Donald Trump is the nominee, then they'll continue down that path. But are they going to really help contribute to the fracturing of the Republican Party? If some kind of real fracture does occur, are we going to attribute that in part, at least, to the conservative media?
Last night, I just tweeted out, you know, Hillary Clinton, NBC News projects her winning the New York primary. And you would have thought that I tweeted out a picture of like ugly babies, because for the next 2 hours, I was called pretty much every name in the book for just reporting facts. So I just think it's really interesting how the Bernie Sanders online world is very critical of anyone that's reporting news. And they couldn't believe that, you know, why are you reporting this? You know, the polls haven't closed and you're projecting it. You're skewing, you're showing your bias. And I just think that my Twitter timeline, I need to walk away from it for a day or two, because it was crazy.
Uno, dos, tres.
Basil Smigel, executive director of the New York State Democratic Party, and Hadass Gold, media reporter for Politico. Thank you so much for joining me in this week's episode of In the Thick.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Julio Ricardo Varela, filling in for Maria Hinojosa. If you like what you heard today, go to iTunes to rate and review us. It totally helps. Tell your elected officials to follow us as well. Follow us on Twitter at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends. Noam Hassenfeld produced this show. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Records. Until next time, hasta la próxima. Los vemos. We'll see you. Thank you for listening. This was In the Thick.